Now, we've been considering the question of spirit and how spirit is synonymous in its appearance in this world with force, or with energy, if you will, and how the manifestations of God bring with them, release into the world, a flood of divine grace or divine love or divine power, how they infuse capacities, how their words and their revelation infuses capacity into all created things, and in particular how it infuses capacity into the human reality, so that we have a step up in potentiality unprecedented over the entire period of recorded history with the appearance of Baha'u'llah, because of the nature of his revelation being the consummation of all the prior revelations, being the revelation destined to realize, to bring about the coming of age of the human race. It has changed the character of mankind. Before, we were children. Now we are adults. Except we're not quite adults, we're adolescents still. But we have discovered some changes about our understanding of the physical world and some changes about our understanding of the mental and spiritual world that were not conceivable before this day. And the Bab says the children of this day excel the wise men of the past. And we see how from generation to generation, how bright oftentimes we find children are. Every place we go in the world, there is a dawning capacity and increase in potential that is latent and also now manifesting itself gradually with the human race. And this is going to reach a certain crescendo as the consciousness dawns on the whole of mankind that we are one people and that it is one planet, and that we establish now this lesser peace, which is really the great peace of mankind. We call it lesser because we know about the most great peace, but really it's the great peace of mankind. And Baha'u'llah in some of his tablets calls it the great peace. And surely we in our teaching work should not refer to the public to the lesser peace, but to the great peace. Because this is that they've been taught and they've been longing for over the centuries. And this is the term that the House of Justice chose to use in its peace statement. Instead of saying lesser peace, it says the great peace. Now we know that that contrasts with the most great peace that's coming in the future. With each increment, with each stage, with each greater dawning of this understanding, also is released greater powers from the revelation itself. This particular perspective, as we focus on it, I find in my own studies, changes the way I look at quotations that before I read and they were beautiful, but I didn't quite feel about them the same way as I do after I read Shoghi Effendi's statements about these energizing forces, these world-shaping, world-shaking forces, or the creative energies that have been infused into society. And I want to just read a few quotations outside of the ones that we'll be reading from Shoghi Effendi that affirm this particular approach. Baha'u'llah says, "This is the day in which God's most excellent favors have been poured out upon men, the day in which His most mighty grace hath been infused into all created things." Again, he says, "Through the movement of our pen of glory, we have, at the bidding of the omnipotent ordainer, breathed a new life into every human frame and instilled into every word a fresh potency. All created things proclaim the evidences of this worldwide regeneration." Again, he says, "Should the word be allowed to release suddenly all the energies latent within it, no man could sustain the weight of so mighty a revelation." Now this capacity that human reality has to reflect, to become the place of appearance of the attributes, names and attributes of God, is unique to human reality amongst all created things. And it's not that the full revelation or the revelation of all of these names has been limited to the day we're in. This is something that was available to human beings from the beginning of creation, from the time that there were souls to know and love God. But when we think of the special bounties of this day, we realize that it's not so much the character of the light as the intensity of it, the magnitude of it that's changed. Baha'u'llah states in one of his tablets, upon the inmost reality of each and every created thing, he, God, hath shed the light of one of his names and made it a recipient of the glory of one of his attributes. Upon the reality of man, however, he hath focused the radiance of all of his names and attributes and made it a mirror of his own self. Alone of all created things, man hath been singled out for so great a favor, so enduring a bounty. These energies with which the day star of divine bounty and source of heavenly guidance hath endowed the reality of man lie, however, latent within him, even as the flame is hidden within the candle and the rays of light are potentially present in the lamp. The radiance of these energies may be obscured by worldly desires, even as the light of the sun can be concealed beneath the dust and dross which cover the mirror. So we see also that as these heightened capacities and potentialities are in creation, we also have the limiting power in our own being through attachment, undue attachment to the world, and attachment to worldly things, or through desires, passions, to obscure the effect and influence of these lights. Then, let's see, there's one more. Just a little foretaste of this question of what are these forces of darkness that we read about in the writings too. From a tablet of Baha'u'llah, he says, indeed, the actions of man himself breed a profusion of satanic power. For were men to abide by and observe the divine teachings, every trace of evil would be banished from the face of the earth. This is, we don't know how we're going to ever get rid of evil. Abide by and observe the divine teachings. If everyone did that, that would be the finish of it. And of course, that's why we realize the benefit of religion and of teaching the cause of God and drawing people within the patterns that are inherent in the divine teachings, in their actions and in their relationships. However, the widespread differences that exist among mankind and the prevalence of sedition, contention, conflict, and the like are the primary factors which provoke the appearance of satanic spirit. Yet the Holy Spirit hath ever shunned such matters. A world in which naught can be perceived save strife, quarrels, and corruption is bound to become the seat of the throne, the very metropolis of Satan. And we know that Satan doesn't exist as an outside force. It's something that is when our lower nature dominates our higher nature. When you have a society where lots of people are doing that, the amount of that kind of dark forces, if you will, that prevail in human relationships are such that Shoghi Effendi says they can affect us. If we become negative, if we think negatively about each other, if we don't love each other, which is really the protection from these things, we get invaded by the dark forces too. And he's listed a whole lot of dark forces in one place. He talks about them being prejudices and hatreds and jealousy. All these lower qualities of human nature are dark forces that keep away, if you say, in a sense, keep us from turning to the light. see, I read this for you last week. The call of God, when raised, breathed a new life into the body of mankind and infused a new spirit into the whole creation. It is for this reason that the world has been moved to its depths and the hearts and consciences of men been quickened. Ere long, the evidences of this regeneration will be revealed, and the fast asleep will be awakened. Now we come to a selection of quotations bearing on the manner in which the manifestation of God Himself receives and diffuses this power that comes from God. I think it's good for us to recall that in the among the fundamental teachings that Shoghi Effendi reviews in the Dispensation of Baha'u'llah, in one section he describes the relationship of the manifestations of God to God. Now, there's something similar, although we can never fully penetrate, obviously, or even begin to conceive how the manifestation of God relates to God. Yet we see how we relate to the manifestation. And it's, again, there's this kind of bridging. It's a parallel. It's a much different level, much different degree. We haven't seen the manifestation of God. We have His message. We understand Him by the effect He has on our own inner being. In other words, we pray and we feel close to Baha'u'llah. When we feel close to Baha'u'llah, we know He's there. But still He's invisible. Still He's not in our grasp, so to speak. He comes to us. Sometimes we're overwhelmed by the bounties of His Spirit. Sometimes we feel remote from Him. The manifestations of God find themselves impelled to reveal the Word of God. They, as far as we can tell, are moved by this Spirit that acts on them, that is part of their nature to receive this reality, that they, as we read and heard in the first class, identify themselves with the primal will, which is like this power that comes out of the Godhead, if you will, and is the ground of creation. You know, the Sufis, some of the old mystics, used to say that God was an ocean and mankind were its waves. All things were the waves on the surface of the sea. And the prophets of God denied this, and Baha'u'llah denies it too. But Abdu'l-Bahá explains that what they're referring to, this universal reality, that the waves of which are all things, is the primal will, not the essence of God. So in that sense, the manifestation is in touch with everything below Him, if you will. You know, He stands at the apex of creation and He views everything under Him and He knows its reality. He's conscious of it. His omniscience is complete. But back behind Him, if you will, the source of where this comes, the faceless one, the essence of God, the world of God, the door is shut and all seeking is barred. And he talks about the manifestations of God. He says, 10,000 prophets as great as Moses are thunderstruck by the interdiction from God, thou shalt never behold me, thou shalt never see me. And he says they are also impotent to try to understand. How can they conceive? So many of these prayers that Baha'u'llah is giving us, they're also in a way applied, in a certain sense, to the manifestation. We know the manifestation from the effects that he has on our own being and on our relationships with those around us. The manifestation of God knows God as He manifests Himself in them. But since they're stainless, perfect mirrors, that manifestation and appearance in them, that capacity for them to act in the role of God to creation, really, causes them to reveal these verses and to give the teachings and to order the lives of men, human society. These are just little clippings, so to speak. Shoghi Effendi says that Baha'u'llah describes briefly and graphically the impact of the onrushing force of the divine summons upon his entire being. You see, the impact of the onrushing force of the divine summons upon his entire being. Now he goes on to quote the things that Baha'u'llah says in the Epistle of the Son of the Wolf with regard to his experience in the Seer Shah. That's in God Passes By, page 101. Again, he says, a period of great spiritual ferment during which the recipient of so weighty a message restlessly anticipated the hour at which he could unburden his heavily laden soul, so replete with the potent energies released by God's nascent revelation. So again, we have the idea, you know, he has this impact of onrushing forces on his being that's instilled potent energies and laden his soul with them. And he's waiting to release them now. An imprisonment, this is still the Seer Child, immortalized as it drew to a close by the sudden eruption of the forces released by an overpowering, soul-revolutionizing revelation. How does Shoghi Effendi find these ways to describe these things? I don't know. Sudden eruption of the forces released by an overpowering, soul-revolutionizing revelation. That's page 107 of God Passes By His Tongue. As the year 80 steadily and inexorably approached, that would be 1863, the year of the Declaration of Baha'u'llah. As the year 80 steadily and inexorably, why is it called the year 80? 1280. 1260 was the revelation of the Bab. 1280 was the declaration of the Bab. 1280 was the declaration of Baha'u'llah. And that's what, 19 years of difference, you know, when you come into the solar calendar. So you have 1844 to 1863. As the year 80 steadily and inexorably approached, he who had become the real leader of that community increasingly experienced and progressively communicated to his future followers the onrushing influence of its informing force. See, we have the manifestation now. It's growing. It's growing in him, too. Progressively communicated to his future followers the onrushing influences of its informing force. Briefly, Shoghi Effendi, that was God Passes By 152. Briefly, Shoghi Effendi says, refers to Baha'u'llah, he says, he who is the vehicle of so mysterious an energy. The vehicle of so mysterious an energy. Baha'u'llah on the one hand says that if I contemplate, on the one hand, you know, my nature is, it's all encompassing of everything, and he says, yet if I look at it in another way, it's less than dust, it's nothing, it's insignificant. And his own individual being is only important as a vehicle of this power and force. As it manifests that power and force, that's its magnificence and its station. And of course, that force acting through him, as in the Gaon, Baha'u'llah himself explains, is of such a degree, of such an intensity at times, that it allows the manifestation of God to speak in the first person, for God in the first person, and say, I am God, and this is what I tell you to do, and do it. And Baha'u'llah says, you know, the people are alarmed at this, get upset. This is the word that the clergy said that the Qa'im would pronounce, a word that would cause the clergy and the people to shake. And word is the changing of he to me. He is God, to the manifestation saying, I am God. Very strong. We never had such a strong revelation in that sense. But Baha'u'llah says that this should not be misunderstood. That this refers to the fact that the manifestation in such moments has totally effaced his own being. That there's not a trace in that court of his reality as a vehicle, but only the presence of God is there. And so it's God really speaking through him to us. And again in God Passes By, page 93 this time, he says, a revelation which flowing out from his travailing soul, again we're back in the Seychelles, the experiences of Baha'u'llah in the Seychelles, a revelation which flowing out from his travailing soul and propagating itself as far as the ends of the earth, it's this image, infused into the entire body of mankind its boundless potentialities, and is now under our very eyes shaping the course of human society. This is your framework for studying history. You want to study history? This is the, you should look through these glasses to see everything about history. Infused, 1852, infused into the entire body of mankind its boundless potentiality, and is now under our very eyes shaping the course of human society. And finally, with reference to the soul of Baha'u'llah after his passing, because whatever Baha'u'llah was while he was here, he was to a degree circumscribed by his material being. He says its influence, that is the influence of the soul of Baha'u'llah, no longer circumscribed by any physical limitations, its radiance no longer beclouded by its human temple, that soul could henceforth energize the whole world to a degree unapproached at any stage in the course of its existence on this planet. This is a great glad tidings for me when I think of it, you know, that we say, well, if only we'd been here at the time Baha'u'llah was here. That must have been the real time to be here. Of course it was a real time to be here. I mean, you could see the manifestation. It had its special, particular bounties. But Shoghi Effendi is telling us here that after his passing, the energies that he infuses into his followers is greater than when he was here. And think how great it was there. Now, our receptivity may not be as great. That's a possibility. You know, because these souls saw him and were constantly around him. I was reading a pilgrim account. One of the ladies that was in New York with Abdul Baha, she'd come across the States and was there and serving Abdul Baha every way she could. Her husband was not a Baha'i, and her husband had a very helpful, very loving secretary. And Abdul Baha told this lady that the time is coming, you must return. You should go back to your husband. He needs you. He needs your love. He needs you to go back. And she said, he can get along all right without me. This is where I need to be. And she started to cry. So Abdul Baha said, the next time I bring this subject up, I want you to smile and accept to go. And after this conversation, one of the Persians was there in the room, said to this lady, he said, the eye that looks too long at the sun becomes blind. And indeed, she got back in time to discover some things about help her husband out of his problems. The master, she writes herself this account. She says, the master understood this, you know, and I didn't get it when he was telling me. He didn't want to say, you know, go back for what reason, but he knew. So she went back and things became better. But this is an interesting idea too, you know. There's an interaction between these. There's a bounty and a pleasure to be in the shrines, but if we were in the shrines all the time, what could we do with it, you know? So there's this interaction between receiving and imparting. That's part of existence here. Now he has a soul that could energize the whole world to a degree unapproached at any stage in the course of its existence on this planet. Very important truth for us to remember. We didn't miss the event. We're in the middle of this day of God. It's still going on. It's manifesting itself with increasing power. We're about to witness a major climax in the coming of age of the human race, characterized by the establishment of the lesser peace, the formulation of a world government, and this recognition of the oneness and wholeness of the human race. We move on now to another section. This has to do with what has been the impact of these creative energies on human society. We hear that he's now in a position to energize more than at any stage in his mission. We hear that from the very dawn of the revelation, those forces went forth from his soul into the world, under the very ends of the earth, and endowed the whole human race with new potentialities. That whole human race is dead now, but those potentialities are something that is our common heritage. They're here for us to draw on. It's as if, I don't know, all the souls that now come into existence come from the primary source of this dynamized potential of the human race on this planet. And we have a series of quotations, again from Shoghi Effendi, that reveal each one other aspects of this mysterious process. He says, this is again, this is in the opening, the foreword of God Passes By. Shoghi Effendi says, before I go on with that now, we've covered that other section, but perhaps you have some comments, some questions that you'd like to ask. You have to help me out, otherwise I'll lose my voice in this. Please. To imply that we wouldn't understand that, except that we get filled up and then we need to use the power, you know? It's like being in the presence of the Master endowed these people with some capacity or awakened in them a consciousness. Naturally, they would never want to be separated from him, but who would teach the faith then to all the people, you know? There is that. There's this coming and going, in a sense, or carrying Baha'u'llah's spirit with us, if you will, better yet, but I was just referring to that. Sometimes we're not able to sit all the time in the shrines, and then we think, well, that's really what I would do if I could. And yet it's too much, you know. It's like the Bab says, the prolongation of prayer is not, it's the quality and purity of the prayer that's important, not its prolongation. So it isn't more in the sight of God that if we say 500 times the remover of difficulty, than if we say it once or 9 times or whatever we're going to say it with purity and with full feeling. And the Akdas echoes this. It says we shouldn't read the verses in such a way that we tire ourselves. It's not God's purpose in giving the verses to make us tired. We pledge that, you know, they used to pledge that they would read the Quran. They had a problem. They say, okay, I pledge a reading of the Quran. Well, there's 30 sessions or something. They have reading and reading and reading, and they stay up all night and read and read and read and read. It's this kind of thing I think the Bab is warning against. There's some mentions of 500 removers of difficulties. Baha'u'llah says to the people in his time, say this, see if you can get out of your troubles, you know, okay. But he doesn't give that as a regular law for his followers to do. We're free, but we're not obliged. You eat to be strong, to act, to serve, and then you get hungry again, so you eat some more. It's kind of seems to be a cycle that we experience over and over again. Other points? He says, already in the space of less than a century, the operation of the mysterious processes generated by its creative spirit has provoked a tumult in human society such as no mind can fathom. Shoghi Effendi, beginning his review of the first Baha'i century, is writing 100 years after the declaration of the Bab. And he speaks about the operation of the mysterious processes generated by its creative spirit. So we have a release of spirit. The spirit is not just there as potentialities. It begins to operate, we're told. And it operates in the form of, thank you, in the form of mysterious processes. We want to listen carefully to this. Operation and mysterious processes. What are these processes? See if we can identify some of them. The result of this, it's provoked a tumult. What's a tumult? What a tumult is. An uproar, impact, a revolt of sorts. Provoked a tumult in human society, such as no mind can fathom, as you can tell by reading the newspaper and editorial sections and things. People don't know what's going on, really. Itself, he's talking about the faith itself here, itself undergoing a period of incubation during its primitive age, it has, through the emergence of its slowly crystallizing system, induced a fermentation in the general life of mankind, designed to shake the very foundations of a disordered society, to purify its life blood, and to reorientate and reconstruct its institutions and shape its final destiny. This is the way we need to look at the world, rather than where did God go? Baha'u'llah came and now he's just left this mess in the world, and what shall we do? You know, sometimes we get this idea, we look at the newspapers, we read the television, see the television, and we think, wow, what's happened, you know? Especially if you live in North America or Europe, Western Europe, and you see everybody seems to be going along very well without the faith. I mean, they have bigger houses and nicer cars and more food to eat and all kinds of. Now, another thing, we see that this seed, the revelation is like a seed, and it's nurtured. And Shoghi Effendi says in another place, it's been nurtured and fed by the blood of 20,000 martyrs. And it's growing as an embryo. Particularly, it was in its stage of incubation during its primitive age, its first or heroic age of the faith. And later now, this embryo is developing in the formative age, all of its various parts, and it will eventually be born as a child. And that stage, Shoghi Effendi said, is the stage of world order. The embryo stage is the stage of administrative order. It's the same creature, it's just that in one stage it's encompassed and developing within the womb of the world, and in the other stage it's standing on the world, it's the director of operations, if you will. It has a long time to grow to maturity itself, but it goes through these various stages. Now he talks about the emergence of its slowly crystallizing system. Well, the system of the faith, again, as I understand here, is the administrative order, the institutions of the administrative order, the future world order of the faith. Now the administrative order, when you really think about it, is you and me. We are all the elements of the administrative order. Shoghi Effendi speaks about the administrative order. He says its model is the monument on the resting place of the greatest holy leaf. Under the base of those first circular stairs are bricks. And he says each one of the bricks is one of the believers. This is the foundation that holds up the whole thing. And then the circular stairways, the three stages of them, says these are the local spiritual assemblies. And this is what we had to build first. He gave the Baha'is to build the local spiritual assemblies. Then he began raising the pillars, as you see on the monument. There's a series of pillars. And he said, those are the national spiritual assemblies. And he used to say, because in his time the House of Justice didn't exist yet, that in the future the crown will be placed on it that you see there on the monument, and that's the Universal House of Justice. And he used that as a model to explain the administrative order. But ultimately, the world order of Baha'u'llah exists in human hearts, not in marble buildings. In other words, it's, even though some of us are playing one function within this order and others another function, yet what would the House of Justice do by itself if it had no Baha'is to follow, if it had no Baha'is to carry out the guidance that it gives? So it's a wedding, it's the whole Baha'i community together that pulses under the influence of this, of these mysterious processes. He asks again, he says, to what agency, if not to the irresistible diffusion of that world-shaking, world-energizing, world-redeeming spirit which the Bab has affirmed is vibrating in the innermost realities of all created things, can the origins of this portentous crisis, incomprehensible to man and admittedly unprecedented in the annals of the human race, be attributed? Why suddenly, history is going along, why did it become so complicated? Why did the situation become so grave? Before, you could make war, but you couldn't make it any faster than you could ride a horse, and carry your bows and arrows and these things. Now suddenly we're into a new age where we're able to shoot first bullets and now rockets and the amounts of destruction that we can do and everything. The crisis is just an entirely other dimension than we've ever had in the past. He wants to know what has brought this on. He says it's the irresistible diffusion of that world-shaking, world-energizing, world-redeeming spirit. There's some, if you're making a list of these, characterizations of spirit, of the spirit that comes through Baha'u'llah, there's three more for your list in case you're taking them down. Creative spirit, world-shaking spirit, world-energizing, world-redeeming. We seem to be in the world-shaking, world-energizing stage right now. The world-redeeming character of it is gradually revealing itself, but not as much as the world-shaking part. The Bab affirms that this is vibrating in the innermost realities of all created things. In these, we can readily recognize, and he's given a list of 10 crisis and situations in the world, He says, in these we can readily recognize the evidences of the travail of an age that has sustained the impact of his revelation, that has ignored his summons, and is now laboring to be delivered of its burden. Problem was in ignoring his summons. This is what set the whole thing up to come apart. If there's an inadequate expression of human society, if it can't embody and can't absorb the spirit of Baha'u'llah and react to it properly, then it comes apart. And that old order is rolled up and a new order will be put out in its spread that will be adequate as a vehicle for the expression of this tremendous creative force that's been released into the world. And he said this has taken place as a direct consequence of the impulse communicated to it by the And here we have some more characterizations of the Spirit. By the generative, the purifying, the transmuting influence of His Spirit. Generative, purifying, transmuting influence of His Spirit. So the destructive phase of all of this process is a visitation from Baha'u'llah. But in the visitation is His presence. And in the end, that's what will remain. After the walls fall down, there will be a more adequate means for their expression. And the institutions of the world order of Baha'u'llah are the perfect agencies designed by God Himself for the expression and transmission of these blessings and forces and energies that we're reading about. In fact, when you think of it, there is a communicated, a generative spirit in the sense of when the child is conceived in the womb. The forces surrounding it and the very character of it contains within itself the coding for the whole human being. But you can't find it there at the very beginning, you know? You can't find the whole expression of it yet. Then gradually it grows and it creates a vehicle for itself, which corresponds to the character and gifts with which it's been endowed. And in the same way, the faith of Baha'u'llah is a divine gift of incalculable dimension, extension, and qualities. But it's not as if we're going to have to build it up in the sense of inventing how we should use it or what it's good for. All that's already coded in it. Ours is the receptivity of that, of the impulses of that spirit, so that we can find what part of that encoding belongs to us. What role are we to play? What element in this body of the world order of Baha'u'llah are we suited to perform? And when we find the role and when we find the things that we should be doing within the cause, and when we perform them, this is when we then conform to the will of God and most resonate to these divine blessings. And that will be the maximum degree of happiness that we could attain and contentment. Because in that state we'll be pleasing to God and we will have attained His good pleasure. And this is the exciting thing about finding our role. And remember in one of the prayers, Baha'u'llah says, "None can divert the course of thine appointment." Now, in this regard, Abdu'l Baha makes a very powerful statement about envy. He said, envy, that is, we look and we say, gosh, I wish I could do what they're doing in the cause, wouldn't you? Or what somebody else is doing in the faith. Or she gets all the chances. She was appointed to the auxiliary board and everything, you know. And I could do that work, but they never appoint me. Abdu'l Baha says, this kind of envy, says, deprives the soul of its own destiny. Completely useless activity, because you can never, he said, no soul can ever play the role of another soul. If you don't play your role, it doesn't get played. That's the great tragedy of it, is that the gifts of the Spirit which you have been given to contribute to the world order of Baha'u'llah will not be manifested in the world order of Baha'u'llah if you don't play your role. All right, somebody else will cover for you in a sense. They'll be done in a different way. But not to the same pattern in the same way as if you could express your part. Now you're doing, you know, you have your role, you're doing this. Then the question is, what spirit we do it with? Okay, well, sometimes we get in a position and we still, by not fulfilling that role with the right spirit, we don't reach and attain to our destiny. All this is happening because of the consequence of the impulse communicated to the world by Baha'u'llah's Spirit. A parallel passage to this, written some years earlier than the one we just read, from the Advent of Divine Justice, see if you recognize this. And this is similar to up above, we were reading, the Bab has affirmed that this world-redeeming spirit is vibrating in the innermost realities of all created things. Here we find synonymously the Guardian describing this now as a God-born force rather than as spirit. There are some keys which allow us to see this as names of a single reality, if you will, or a single power, if you will. He says, that God-born force, what a marvelous, where have you ever seen this in literature before? God-born force. That God-born force, irresistible in its sweeping power, incalculable in its potency, unpredictable in its course, mysterious in its workings, and awe-inspiring in its manifestations. A force which, as the Bab has written, vibrates within the innermost reality or innermost being of all created things, and which, according to Baha'u'llah, has through its vibrating influence upset the equilibrium of the world and revolutionized its ordered life. Still fetter the infant and as yet unemancipated faith of Baha'u'llah. The undreamt of opportunities offered through the operation of this force. The American believers must now rise and fully and courageously exploit them. With reference to Baha'u'llah's speaking about the vibrating influence, he talks about this, that the world's equilibrium has been upset through the vibrating influence of this new world order. I forgot the exact. Do you remember this? This new world order. And he says that this has upset the equilibrium of the world and has revolutionized its ordered life. Okay? We were talking to Irving Laszlo about this. One time I had an opportunity, I had a meal with him in San Francisco, talking about the Baha'i teachings a little bit. And I quoted this thing from Baha'u'llah. I remembered it that time. And he listened to this. He said, when did Baha'u'llah write that? He said, it's about 1873. He says, he's preceded by 50 years the science's first mention of this principle, which has now been developed by Prigozhin, Ilya Prigozhin, a Russian living in Belgium, who won the Nobel Prize for chemistry. He describes what's known as dissipative structures, which I'm not a scientist to be able to explain these things very well, but I'll just briefly, what I understand of it is that if you have a system, a closed system of sorts, in which the forces are in equilibrium, and the functions and everything are carrying on all right, and you introduce another force into that system, one of two things will happen. Either the system will absorb the new force and compel it to act within its range and program and whatever it is, or if the influence of this new spirit is too great, it will cause the system to come apart. It will introduce a disequilibrium which will not be balanced again. And then there has to be a complete coming apart of the elements and a reconfiguration around this new influence, this new force that's acting on it. So the field comes apart and puts itself back together again within consideration, now acting as a vehicle or as a means that accommodates this new spirit. And he told me, he was talking about this. He said, now we see that there's a spirit acting in the world that's taking society apart and putting it back together again. And he understands that the putting back together again is the unity of mankind and the formation of a world state for the first time. So we find, again, these parallels in the material world and the natural world and the physical world, which confirm these things. And scientists are going to get more and more excited about the things they see in the Baha'i writings as they discover these truths. Okay, do you have anything you want to say? Please. Maybe. I mean, the things that do act on us, you know, influences that I have, I don't know whether they're coming from the subconscious mind or just how they influence us, but. I think what you said is the key to it. It's all happening in human reality. I mean, human society is based on what human beings do. And it isn't that, once in a while a volcano goes off or the earthquakes or something, but Abdu'l-Bahá even says there's some correlation between the moral and spiritual nature of society and what happens to the natural forces around us. He gives some hints about that. I remember Dr. Muhajir saying something, paraphrasing something from a tablet. He said that in the writings it says that these floods that the world is experiencing come from the tears of orphans. Of orphans cause these floods. It's something to think about, you know. I mean, how much of our state causes chaos in the physical creation, because man is the heart of creation, you know, the human race, and what human reality is doing, for instance, is given a revelation and it's resisting it. It's turned a blind eye to it. You know, there's a small element. Who are we? You know, when you think Baha'u'llah has come and proclaimed this revelation, there was the means for everybody really to hear about it. And we're maybe not yet 1% of the human race that have accepted the cause, and what percent of that 1% that have accepted it are supporting it, are actively trying to do something for it. It's a very poor show so far, really, when you think of it. Now, the world is going through those events which will bring about the mass conversion of whole races and nations to the cause. Some of it will happen through our efforts. We have to be ready to take advantage of the opportunities. But God is really, Baha'u'llah is working and moving things in such a way that people awaken to the reality and needs. And it seems if they don't suffer, they don't open their eyes and listen. The people that say after the Second World War, how receptive the Germans were to the cause. How receptive the people in Europe were, even in France, they were very receptive, right after the war. A year later, 2 years later, it started to close in again. This is what this Ray Khanum was saying about Romania and about the Soviet Union. This is the moment for that.
How do you combat evil? I mean, this evening I saw a man being cruel to a young boy. And I was just totally inadequate. I didn't know how to stop it. I didn't know Hebrew. I couldn't shout. How can you combat that evil?
Since that happens to be something that was right in front of your eyes, yeah. How do we combat it in the world? You know, it's frustrating at every level. The cause is the only way. It's eventually an education, but in that particular instance, I don't know. You say your prayers if you're inspired to do something, but it's very hard, especially if it's a father and a son or something like that. Yeah. Please, Vida. I hint in that direction. I think there's indications in the writings. I don't know, you know, I'm sure I don't know enough about it to be able to affirm that it's that's the way everything works, whether weather patterns or whatever works that way. I don't know. But I have my own suspicions, let's say, that there's a lot more connections than we think, you know. And also our health and how we feel probably has a lot to do with how we respond and interact with the revelation itself, to some degree. Although some of the greatest teachers have died of cancer and everything else, then that's something that seems to add to their sacrifice, you know. I don't know, it's mysterious. There's an interaction between the environment and man. There's that letter in the conservation compilation about the relationship of the environment to human reality and to human society. You can't isolate one from the other. They interact on each other. But whether it's the social environment or it includes the whole environment is a question that's not completely clarified by the quotation. But it's a good question to have in your minds, to watch the writings and watch the things you're studying and see how it works. Joel was saying about this, you know, it's the role of the human being in it. Even if you say these forces are outside man, yet what we see is their action in people. That's the only place we see it. As they manifest good, or as they manifest these satanic forces that we read about, you know, through their violence, through their hatred, and so on. Yeah, that's the field of play is the human heart, the human reality. You don't see it other places, except maybe in sometimes the violence of nature, but. So you're perfectly right about that. It's good to remember when you're thinking about these, so you don't start just images of forces in the air, you know, so to speak. You're talking about the forces in human society. No, I don't know. I mean, you know, I would say probably if you surveyed over a year all these calamities, different places, maybe the calamities of drug abuse are sufficient in the other areas to cancel out some of the other. I don't know. You know, I mean, you don't know how it's all seen in the eye of God. I don't know. But there are, of course, calamities in other places. There's been lots of flooding and cyclones and tornadoes in North America. Things happen in South America. There are some areas in the world that seem to have more difficulties than others. That's why I say I don't want to affirm that I think it's this way or that, because I really don't know myself. I mean, I haven't decided. And I don't think I have, you know, quotes, enough quotations to really be able to stand up and defend the thing. But I suggest it as something worthy of putting in your think tank and keeping there and balancing and playing with and watching and see what you can understand.
Yeah.
frequency with which world leaders are dropping off. I don't know. You'll probably match one with each earthquake. I'm sure your question is very flattering, but I don't have an answer for it. Part of this process is this accumulation, greed, and wealth in the hands of a few, and so on. We were working today on the Aktas committee, reviewing some notes related to the laws of inheritance that Baha'u'llah has established. And you realize that these laws are for intested cases. And that is, if you haven't left a will, then it will be, your goods will be distributed according to the scheme that Baha'u'llah has given, but you're perfectly free to dispense with your properties as you want. You know, so you say, well, that's not enough, I want to give more to my wife. All right, that's fine, you make your will and do it. But there's a letter from Shoghi Effendi which says that even in the case where you don't choose the scheme that's given by Baha'u'llah, yet the believers are under the obligation to respect the spirit of Baha'u'llah's law, which is that wealth should not be accumulated in just the hands of a few individuals. So this would color the way you'd write your will, you know, because you would tend to want to distribute your wealth. I don't know if it's wealth, whatever you have. Baha'is don't usually have any wealth to distribute. Distributed across a broader spectrum of individuals. He says you should bear that in mind. You should bear in mind that Baha'u'llah's system that he's given divides this thing into seven categories of souls that will receive benefits from your, and then each category of those may have, for instance, brothers and sisters may have many or may have few. But that's one of the categories. So many shares go to the category of brothers and sisters, and then they're shared among however many there are in that particular category. So on. So he says that even when you're making your will alone, you should be influenced, you know, by the spirit of Baha'u'llah, which is that wealth should not be accumulated in the hands of just a few individuals. And that's why he's made that scheme that way. And yet still he's gracious and he leaves us free to decide whatever we want to do. Okay. In another message from the Guardian, he says, as the days roll by, as the perturbations of an imperiled civilization are more alarmingly manifested, the potentialities of God's creative plan correspondingly unfold. This is a very important principle for us because we're coming into these more and more chaotic times. And the valor and heroism of its intrepid supporters are more widely and convincingly demonstrated. I'll read it again. As the days roll by, as the perturbations of an imperiled civilization are more alarmingly manifested, the potentialities of God's creative plan correspondingly unfold, and the valor and heroism of its intrepid supporters are more widely and convincingly demonstrated. No, this is Messages to America, page 18. That's 8 February 1939. I'll put a mark here for next time. I'm sure you'll probably find things in your own meditations and readings which supplement this material, I hope so, during the week. We'll come back to this same theme now next time, which is again the impact of these creative forces on human society.